And this morning, we really begin to set our sights on the coming death and crucifixion of Jesus. So if you have a Bible with you or a phone with you that has a Bible on it, you can turn to John 18. And at 28 is kind of where we're going to pick this story up. And just so you know, like this morning just kind of ends at a bad spot in the text. It is the moment where the crowds are yelling, "Crucify him." And it's one of the rare moments where we do not kind of have a lot of good news. Because we are heading on purpose to this day, and we'll pick the story up on Friday after Pilate and the other leaders have given in to this cry of "Crucify him." So just kind of as we go down the story, here's where we are. It's on purpose as we kind of have been slowing down these final moments of Jesus' life. But if you have a Bible, John 18, 28, and we're going to get there here in a few moments. But to get us started, we're going to play a little game. And I'm going to put a picture on the wall, and you know the characters that will be on the wall. You know their reputation, you know their newsworthiness, you know kind of why some of these faces will be on the wall. And similarly, you all will see that, and it will evoke a response from you based on what you know. So like I said in the first service, my mom used to say this little phrase, and this is kind of the asterisk to this. If one of the pictures on the wall causes you to say something negative, if you do not have anything nice to say at all, don't say it, all right? So I know that by virtue of the faces that I've chosen, it's going to invoke some things. So if you're like, "Liar," like just keep it to yourself. Like you don't need to do that. So we'll start with the first one, and the first time you, like, what comes to your mind? This first picture. Quarterback. Superstar. Deflategate. That's fair. Cheater. That's another word. I'm just saying. My mom's not here. No. The next picture. Oh. All right. So. All right. Go to the next one. Go to the next one. What comes to your mind? Compassion, love, mercy, service, unconditional love. And for those of you who do not know who this is Mother Teresa. And it's weird. I mean, I'm in this weird generational space of, like, there are references that I would make of, like, Billy Graham, and my kid's like, "Who's that?" Like, so this face is known by many. But in a few short years, they'll be like, "Who's that?" So this is Mother Teresa. Next one. What comes to mind? Strength, freedom, endurance, grace. Next one. Tough, vision, equality, justice. As people, long before we meet someone, we often hear kind of the newsworthiness of such people. And we then begin to build our own narrative around these individuals. And that same dynamic really is in the text that we've been working through this week. And it's this moment when Jesus is brought before Pilate. And right away, we get a sense that Pilate, they've never met in person until this moment, but Pilate is aware of some of the accolades connected to who Jesus is. In the city of Jerusalem, in the greater Jerusalem area, you can't be a leader, you couldn't have been an official, and not know of the story of Jesus that began to grow and became a kind of a legend, and all of the whispers that would have been around the greater Jerusalem area, particularly as we head towards Good Friday. So in this passage, you can read it right in all the gospel narratives, in Luke 27, Luke 23, Mark 15, and John 18, there's a moment, and we're going to throw John 18 up. This is when Pilate first meets Jesus. And this is the phrase that comes from Pilate. We'll put up on the screen. It says this: "Are you the King of the Jews? Are you the King of the Jews?" I love Jesus' response to Pilate in this moment where Jesus says, "Is this your own idea, or did others talk to you about me? Is this your idea, or did someone tell you that this is a title that someone has given to me in this moment?" Now, the next exchange is the critical one that I want you to hold in your mind while we work through our time together this morning. And Pilate then says to Jesus, he says, "You are a king then." Now, beware, Pilate understands that there is really one true king, and his name is Caesar. They would go one step further to say it's a deity. It's kind of God in the flesh. The Roman emperor is the one who is the boss. And Pilate, "So you are a king then." Jesus then responds and says, "You say that I'm a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into this world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." Pilate's response, "What is truth? What is truth?" And this is this first encounter between Jesus and Pilate that in many ways Pilate has heard, similar to you with the pictures on the screen. He has heard the story of, now face to face with, "You're a king." And Jesus responds, "The ones who hear me, they understand that my voice is the truth. They will listen to it. They will follow it." And Pilate's response is, "Well, what is truth?" This is Holy Week. Over the next 7 days, millions of people in millions of moments will be talking about Jesus in one way or another. It'll be on radio broadcasts. It'll be on TV. I've been watching a series on History Network called Jesus, His Life. It's in newspapers. There are all kinds of articles that will be highlighting the reality of this particular holiday, trying to explain who it is. It will be all through the newspapers. Coffee shops, people will gather together. They will hear these different things. People love to talk about Jesus in one way or another. It'll even take place around our dining room tables. And what I find fascinating about all of these millions of moments where people will be talking about Jesus as we move towards Good Friday and Easter Sunday, the gemstone of Christian faith, regardless of who you are, where you live, our personal background, every conversation that people will have about Jesus will really fall into three different groups of people or three different categories. And each of these categories are really highlighted in the passages that we've been reading in preparation for this morning. Again, in Matthew 27, you'll see these three categories. In Luke 23, you'll see these three groups of people. In Mark 15 and John 18, you'll see these groups of people all kind of identify in one way or another around the conversations about who Jesus is. So for our time together this morning, I'm going to highlight these different categories, these groups of people, and you will find yourself in one of them. Let's get to the first one. The first one is the Herods. This is the human response that we see in Herod, where Herod's response to Jesus is essentially entertain us. In Luke's gospel, in the 23rd chapter, we read the moment where Jesus stands before Herod. Jesus is sent to Herod by Pilate because Pilate ultimately doesn't want to make a decision about who Jesus is. And Pilate knows that Jesus has spent the majority of his life, the majority of his ministry, in the region where Herod is the boss. So Pilate, in a very weird way, as a Roman governor, acquiesces to Herod, says, "You go make this decision." And Jesus is on his way to Herod, and Herod is excited that Jesus is coming to town. He is excited that he gets to meet the one, he gets to see the one that he has heard all of these stories about, similar to that of Pilate. We see this story unfold in Luke's gospel that when Herod sees Jesus, it says he's greatly pleased, because he's heard a lot about him. And the text goes on to say he hoped that Jesus would perform some sort of sign or miracle. And Jesus does nothing. And they begin to mock him. And they send him back over to Pilate. Herod is a person then, which really represents a group of people even now, who want to see Jesus. They have heard the stories of Jesus. But they are simply looking to be entertained by him. Do a little dance for us, Jesus. Get a rise out of us, Jesus. Do that water to wine thing again. Really not interested in who you are and following you, but I certainly want to see the tricks that you can do. We see this outside of the community of faith all the time. I would bet my life if Jesus was living in our kind of culture, our time and place today, the entertainment promoters in Vegas would be after him like no one's business. We could get you set up with a nightly gig right between Garth Brooks and Celine Dion and David Blaine, Jesus. People would come from all over the world to see him based on what they have heard him say and do. I'm sure that they would speak things into his life, like you could kind of build your show. You could start with the water to wine, similar to that of your ministry. And then maybe you could go like the one step further, find a guy with leprosy, and you could heal him, and you could do this, and you could do that, pitching this idea to Jesus, knowing that they're going to let a lot of money off him because he's a great entertainer. If the show was on the strip, I'd bet my life that it would sell out every single night. People would come from far and wide to see him, all based on what they have heard about him. And they would leave the show, buy one of the plastic glow-in-the-dark Jesuses, put it on their car window dash, and be on their way, simply engaging with Christ to be entertained by him. We see this inside the community of faith as well, and this is the part that makes me frustratingly angry. Come get your green miracle handkerchief. Buy the miracle water from the Dead Sea, which by the time it gets to you is stagnant and gross. Take a chip of stone from the Wailing Wall, all for $29, and hope that one of these trinkets might do a miracle for you that you'd be healed and restored. All in the entertainment business, all laced in the community of faith, which is abhorrent at every level. All over the world this week, this will happen. People will talk about Jesus. People will engage about who he is and his name, and they will all be seeking to be entertained by him. The second group of people that comes out of the passages of Scripture is this group connected to Pilate and his wife Claudia. In Matthew chapter 27, we read this moment where Pilate's wife, who history has come to call Claudia, she sends him a letter, sends him a note, while Jesus is on trial before him. A note that reads, "Don't have anything to do with this innocent man. I had a dream about him last night, and I'm suffering much because of this dream." Now, we do not know what the dream was, but we do know that she encourages her husband to go no further with him, because they understand that they will suffer much if they continue on down the track that this is on. History describes Pilate as a ruthless leader of Rome. He is quick to kill, quick to destroy, quick to push anything out of the way of Rome and its power and authority, and he is dealing with Jesus, a king. That would be in the way of Rome. And now here, the way the Gospels record Pilate's engagement with Jesus, we do not see a strong, ruthless leader. We see someone who is a little bit apprehensive, maybe even nervous, maybe even sympathetic towards him. And I would argue that the difference in action that we see in Pilate in this moment, which is so different from how he acts in history, is that maybe, just maybe, Pilate actually believes Jesus is in fact different. Maybe there's something in Pilate's heart that's like, this guy actually is what he says he is. Pilate and his wife are people then, and they are a group of people now, that they know Jesus is different. They know that he isn't about a religion of sorts. They know that he's special. They know that his deeds match his words. They are drawn to him peculiarly. There is a pause, so to speak, as they engage this person of Jesus. And yet they just don't go all the way. They just won't follow. There is too much at stake. They hold high positions in the Roman government system. They hold high positions of power and authority and wealth. And to go this one further step, they just can't get there. And quite frankly, their life is a life of torment based on their encounter with Jesus, knowing he's different, but they won't go all the way. The outworking of this group, we see it in Pilate and his wife, and we see it in our own lives. Filled with torment. It's filled with often moments of guilt and shame. We know, like they know, that Jesus is different. That Jesus is inviting us into something greater and better than what we understand to be connected to our version of life. And yet they and we will not go all the way because there's just too much at stake. As a pastor over the last 18 years, I have seen this hundreds of times. I'm invited out to someone's home or a coffee shop just to talk with someone, to work through something they're working through. So often, I just sit there and listen to them explain their own argument as to what they're struggling with. I know what Jesus says, I know who he is, I know what he's asking, but I also know this is what I am, and this is what I want, and this is where I want to go. And I just sit back and watch the dialogue unfold in real time in said person. With the occasional encouragement to reconsider and think about kind of beyond the temporary things that you're struggling in, that you're wanting to desire, etc., etc. And yet I watch this conversation unfold, and the vast majority of the time I watch them, like Pilate, just continue on doing what they want to do. Knowing that their life is going to be filled with a kind of torment and shame from that moment on. And one of the great joys of pastoring in a place for a long time is, a year and a half to 2 years later, my phone will ring. And we'll have a coffee with the same person, working through the same issue again, where I'll hear the dialogue unfold again, where I'll encourage again to consider, but they just won't go all the way. There's too much at stake. They just won't commit to following Jesus, even though they know that he's different. Even though that they know that he actually brings life. Even though they know, they just will not go there because there is way too much at stake. All over the world this week, this will happen. People will gather in homes and coffee shops, and they will discuss, and they will know that he is different, but there is just too much at stake in their personal lives, and they'll continue on their merry way, and that merry way is going to be laden with struggle and strife and shame and torment because they know the truth, but they do not want to follow it. The third group of people, and this is the vast majority of people. We read about them in John 19 and Matthew 27. This is the chief priests and the crowds. After Pilate questions Jesus, he brings them out to the crowd and says, "Here is your king." The chief priests and the elders persuade the crowd to ask for Barabbas, a known criminal, a known convicted murderer, to have him released and have Jesus killed and crucified. Pilate asks again, "Which of these two men do you want me to release to you free?" "Barabbas," they answer. "What shall we do then with Jesus, your Messiah, your king?" "We have no king but Caesar," they said. "Take him away and crucify him." "Why?" Pilate asks. "What crime has this man committed?" They shouted all the louder, "Crucify him." When Pilate saw that he's getting nowhere, he responds to the crowd that says, "I am innocent of this man's blood. It is your responsibility." And the people answered this, "His blood is on our hands and on the hands of our kids." He releases Barabbas to them. He had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. Caiaphas and the crowds are people then, and they are a group of people now, who they just flat out hate the idea of someone ruling over them. "We have no king but Caesar," they say. Listen, the Jews hate Caesar. They are under his oppression. It is a weird political game they're playing with Pilate to say, "We have no king but your king, and if you don't kill him, we will rat on your king, saying that you did not terminate the life of someone who claimed to be a king. We don't have any king but Caesar." They are not interested in letting Caesar rule their life. They are interested in their own lives and them ruling it. All over our Western culture, we hate anyone who might rule over us because we are our own kings and we are our own queens. And the greatest irony of life is this. The one who is rightfully come into this world to rightfully rule, to rightfully bring life, to rightfully offer life, is hated and removed. So that we, in our wisdom, can rule our own lives. And in our rulership of our own life, we lead ourselves into spaces where we elect politicians. And I don't even need to fill in any. It's just hilarious, the world in which we live, all coming from a people who are their own kings and queens, thinking that their wisdom is good wisdom. In our own leadership of our own lives, we practice as marriages in a way that harms our wife and harms our husband in awful ways, but we will never let anyone rule over our home because somehow we know best. Ask your wife how that is going. Ask your husband how that's going. We remove anyone who would hold the position of authority over our lives because we think we know how to do this well. We celebrate sexuality in our wisdom, where everything is broken, because there will never be anyone to rule over us. How dare you speak absolute truth in our life when there is no such thing as absolute truth? Okay, then keep doing it your way. Keep inviting brokenness and suffering and torment into your life. Maybe, just maybe, he knows what he's talking about. Can't. No one's going to rule over me. Okay, then you keep ruling over you and see how it goes in this life and how it sets us up for the life to come. In our own wisdom, no one will rule over us. Let's talk about how we just continually, willingly destroy issues of our own mental health. Just continually barraging and opening ourselves up to things that shape us in all kinds of harmful ways. But we certainly do not want anyone to rule over us because we know what we're doing. All over the world this week, this will happen. People will discuss Jesus and they will flat out hate him because no one's going to rule us. No one is going to have that position of power and authority over us. This is Holy Week. Over the next 7 days, millions of people in millions of moments will talk about Jesus in one way or another. And all of these groups of people will fall into one of these three groups of people. There'll be a Herod. Just do a little dance for us. Just entertain us for a little bit. Do that trick that you do so well. Go on our way. We'll be the pilots where we are drawn and yet we don't know why we're drawn. We see something distinctly different in him, but we will not go all the way because there's way too much at stake. And then there's the vast majority of us where we're just like Caiaphas. Crucify him because no one's going to rule over us. No one is going to have that kind of power in my life. As I said earlier to begin this conversation, what breaks my heart is that we seldom take a passage and we leave it at a space where there is no hope. Well, as we head towards Good Friday, when Pilate hands Jesus over to be flogged and then to be killed, it appears as though there is no hope, that this man's going to die. This man is going to experience an incredible injustice for really nothing. For really nothing. We started by highlighting this critical moment. We'll put it back on the screen. The reason I was born and came into this world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. If you're here this morning and you're about the truth, that you want to know it and live in it and experience it, you cannot deal with this conversation and not engage with the living Son of God. We just can't. I'm going to invite Kevin and team. They're going to come and lead us in a song. And I'm going to introduce, after they're done, a group of people that's not in the text, but a special group, because in the midst of the millions of moments that will come this week, there's this group that we do not see in the passages that we were reading this week, that it will happen by God's grace. It will happen as he moves in the hearts of people. We don't see it in the text this week, but we want to land here in the spot of a great story of this other group, this other category, that God calls to himself in beautiful ways. I'm going to pray. Kevin's going to lead us in a song. And then after, I'm going to introduce to you a special friend of mine that I know he will bless your life. Let's pray together.